Okay, great. So the first thing I'm going to do is share my desktop so you can see my PowerPoint presentation. And our main purpose for today is to kind of go over some of the best practices and procedures for when you're using SmartPort in workflows, and also to not just to review it, but there are some new requirements that we would like people to start fulfilling when they bring in records, now that we've had this really great opportunity to update our Symphony database. And so I wanted to start off, there's my objective, sorry. So we're going to start off, we're going to talk about the background on the authority project from the fall. Then I'll try to go over quickly some of the things that are important to remember when you're using call number and item maintenance to catalog, and just make sure that everybody's on the same page about when it is that you go to SmartPort to actually find a record from another location. We'll talk about basic and advanced search options that are in SmartPort, give you some tips on copy cataloging with SmartPort, and talk about how you can edit records that you are bringing into our system in order to make sure that they will be the best records that they can be as far as records that your patrons can find, making sure that they can identify what format they're getting, whether it's a video or an audio or just a print material, large print, and so on. So to start, I think, you know, I did send out a few messages over in the fall about this different authority project that we did, and I'm not sure exactly how, you know, clearly everybody understands what that project was and the scope of it. So basically, we had the chance to sign up with Circe Dynex to do a full authority control project. So we, over time, have many different variations of names that did not necessarily match up. Some of them, you know, say it was an author. Some of them have the birth date of the author. Some of them don't. And when you're browse searching, then those two things don't show up all together. You may have subject headings that were obsolete or that were just misspelled or they were not valid anymore. So what we were able to do is Circe Dynex took out all of our 750,000 title records. They just made a copy of our whole database and all of our name and subject authorities, and they cleaned them up for us. And this cost, I think it was something like $18,000, but we were able to pay for much of it with our Blue Cloud rewards, and then Superior Land Library Cooperative pitched in a huge amount of money, too, in order to just make the database better. So this was a one-time project. They went ahead, they cleaned those up. I think we extracted them. It took them about a month to work on the records. Then they loaded them all back into the system and re-indexed everything. At that time, they, like, deleted our entire old subject heading and name heading file, and then they reloaded 423,204 new authorities for us that were all authorized from the Library of Congress. Additionally, as we were looking at the records on our system, we had some foreign language subject headings that we don't use, and we don't have the characters for many foreign language languages, so they removed those headings. They also removed FAST headings, which are used by OCLC, and we are not an OCLC ILS, so they took those out. And then these BIFAC subject headings, and they're the subject headings that you see sometimes in records that are all in uppercase. They're kind of icky looking, and they're used more for acquisitions, so they don't really belong in our database either. And if that wasn't enough, they also added these new RDA tags to titles where they were needed. What has happened is the cataloging standard has changed from what was called AACR2 to this new RDA resource description and access standard, and that standard has removed the GMD, the thing that we used to see in the titles that would say in brackets, sound recording, video recording. That is no longer a valid subfield in the record. There are these other tags that we'll be showing you to look for and telling you about how you can add them. So they went ahead and in all of our records on the system where they needed them, they added those in, and then they took out most of those old sound recording, video recording, and all that. And one last thing that we did this fall is our cataloging committee, which is Megan Buck from Dickinson and Tracy Baim from Peter White and me right now. It's just a small committee of three of us. We created this item category 4 that we would like people to start using as they add new items. And that new item category can be used to indicate formats of book, DVD, Blu-ray, MP3 audio. And we'll show you how that's going to show up in our new online catalog to also improve searching. So I'm just going to jump right in and kind of quickly review some of the steps to go through when you are looking to add a new item to the system. The first thing that we would really like you to do is, rather than going to SmartPort first, we do recommend that you do a search in the call number and item maintenance just to see if somebody already has it. The majority of the time with so many of us on the system, there is already a record. And so rather than starting out and searching in SmartPort and then having to redo that search in call number and item maintenance, you may as well just start there. And I'm thinking it also will minimize the chance that you don't notice that there was a title on our system and that we don't want to accidentally overlay or replace the one that we already have. One of the things that I'm not sure if every cataloger is aware of is how easy it is to change your default properties. So whenever you add item, when you, click on that, it goes ahead and it fills in some different values. And it can become kind of time-consuming if your default is, say, book, and you've got a stack of DVDs, and you have to every time change it to new DVD and then another home location. It can just kind of slow you down. So I just wanted to make sure, while I've got everybody on the phone, I'm going to bring up my workflows, that you realize that when you click on call number and item, some of you, it will automatically go to this properties window. And I'm not sure what my properties are on this one. And this one, it does. So in this, with my particular login that I'm using, it's automatically coming up to this properties window where I can go in, and if I was doing a bunch of new books for juvenile fiction, I could have that in here. But if I'm doing something else where it's, DVDs or I need to change it some other way, then I can do that in here. And obviously I can deviate from that as I'm adding the items, but it could speed me up and make things go a little bit faster. If this doesn't automatically come up for you and you want to change your properties, you can just right-click on the call number and item wizard and hit properties, and it will come up. That whatever changes you make in here, they'll stay in effect as long as you're using workflows for that day. Then when you close workflows, it's going to say to you, your properties have changed. Do you want to save your changes? And if you say yes, then it'll remember, oh, she was working on new DVDs. And then that will be your setting until you change it again. So it's a choice you have. If you say no, it'll just revert to the default that you had, prior to making the changes. And then this screenshot is just calling your attention to that new item category 4 that we have. Just to remind everybody, the default iTypes for new items, if you are a PI library that participates in interlibrary loan, for brand new things, you'll want to make sure to pick new CD book, new DVD, or new book, because those iTypes are not requestable by other libraries for 60 days after that item's added. Then you never have to touch it. We have a weekly report that'll recognize after it's been on the system for a certain number of days, and will automatically convert those new items to just the regular book, CD book, or DVD, so it can be requested at that time. Of course, if you're just getting a bunch of donated Harlequin romances or paperbacks or what have you, or it's a replacement copy and you aren't concerned about whether or not a hold from another library might be placed on it, you also have the option of just picking the regular item type that's not new. For your default item home locations, obviously you're going to select a commonly purchased item type or item home location. The default can be changed. Just a quick reminder, do not select cataloging or discard as your default item home location. If you set something to cataloging as the home location, that item will be gone the next day unless it's checked out to somebody at the time, or unless it has a bill or a hold or something keeping it on the system. And if you set something to discard, then at the end of the week, on Sunday, it will be deleted. If you're a Melcat library and you want to discard something that has already been sent to the Melcat catalog, you would definitely set it to discard, because we also send a file to Melcat letting them know, oh, these items aren't in our collection anymore. This is just showing you the item categories 2 and 4. You've been using item category 2 to indicate juvenile, young adult, and adult for a long time. But we've also added that new item category 4 this fall. And these are the current choices that are available for that item category. If as you're looking at this, you feel like you need a different one to be created for something that you have in the collection, just, you know, send me an email or give me a call. Because it may be, you know, since this is new, we haven't thought of every format that needs to be represented here. I did go back in our database, and I've put a lot of item category 4s in our existing collection, and I'll probably go through that again. But as you're cataloging new things, if you could kind of put on your to-do list that you're going to start using those item categories, that would be great. And here's a screenshot. This is a screenshot of Enterprise, which is coming in this winter to a library near you, to your library. So here is just a picture of how those item category 2 and 4 facets will appear in our new online catalog. So, you know, here I did a search at the Peter White Public Library for dogs, and all of the results that I got, all these 2,260 records, I could click, you know, one or more of the interest levels, or I could also limit by the format that way. And we're just thinking this is going to be much more user-friendly. You know, we've got a lot of different iTypes. We've got new book 14-day, book 7-day, all these different things. We just want people to be able to quickly limit by print or large print or different, you know, audio without having to care about all these different things that we did behind the scenes so we could make the loan period different or make it requestable or what have you. So I think this might be a good time. I'm just going to go back for a minute and unmute and see if there's any questions so far. Let's see. Trying to do that. Here we go.
The conference has been unmuted.
Hey, Sean, I have a quick one.
Sure.
On the RDA resource description, what was the A for?
And access.
Access. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
I think initially they started to work on AACR3, but then decided that really things had changed quite considerably as far as how we share information, and that it would be better to sort of come up with a new standard. And one of the reasons that they took the sound recording and all those that information out of that title field is to make it easier to parse by other systems. So, like right now, you know, if we do like a search engine search, like Google or something like that, you're not going to be able to search inside of our catalog. But by taking steps towards breaking up the information and having it in more consistent kind of chunks, you know, tags in the MARC record, it'll make it easier to parse, and there may come a time where we can then better share information from our library catalog to other others on the internet that are, you know, outside of the library world. So it's kind of, you know, it's a change, and obviously it's going to be an adjustment, but I think it is a step in the right direction, so, you know, and we have no choice. So any other questions right now?
Sean, could you show where that item category 4 is?
Yeah. So if it's okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to maybe, should I mute again? Let me just show you this and then I'll mute again because I hate to not be able to hear what you're saying. So I'm going to go over here to workflows and I'm going into call number item and I'll just say that I'm adding a new item here. Okay. when I add, so I'm adding, let's say, I think I'm logged in as the training library, so I'll add a call number for the training library. And then here I have my item. It's already filled in. Remember I told you how I was kind of populating it in the existing records because I couldn't see telling you guys, like, in your spare time that, you know, everything in your collection, you should go in and modify these. But for this particular one, oh, no, it's not populating. I'm sorry. This is my default. My defaults were adult and book. So that's why I put it in there. So here I could pick adult or juvenile or young adult, and then, and this is actually juvenile, right? So juvenile, and then this is a CD book, so I would change it to CD book. And then I would make my changes here, so CD book.
So the initial search under this, would you do call number, not title?
I'm going to talk about searching next, so why don't I go ahead, but that's where the item category four is for the format. And I should look into seeing if, since these are pretty standard, I should look into seeing if maybe we could even put in some more helpful labels for these, you know, so that it's easier to identify what we're doing. So, okay, I'm going to go ahead and out of that. And I will mute again, if that's okay, unless there's any other questions right now. Okay, so I'll mute again for a little bit, and I'll kind of continue on. I think the next thing I'm going to talk about is searching a little bit, so that should fit in with your question.
All right.
So we'll share. Oh, I've got to mute.
The conference has been muted.
Okay, so back to my slides. So when you are searching in call number and item maintenance, I think that sometimes the temptation is just to, you know, you're doing the general keyword search for of all libraries. Hopefully everybody's doing that. So general keyword search of all libraries would let you, you know, say scan the ISBN on the book, and then it's going to search and see if it has an exact match to that. And the great thing about it is if it does, it just opens that record right up so that you can look at the bibliographic information, match it up, and say, oh, yes, this is perfect for what I have in my hand. Just to mention, you can also search by the OCLC number if you happen to know what that is, or if the material doesn't seem to have an ISBN on it, but it has an LCCN number, you can search by that, too. There's the little trick where you have to replace that hyphen that appears in the number in the book with a zero. And I will give you guys a copy of these slides. So, you know, if you need to refer back to any of this or if you're not writing it down fast enough, then that kind of gives you an example of how the format of the LCCN number should look. So what I was saying is that I think a lot of times if somebody doesn't get a match on an ISBN, they'll say, oh, it's not in there. There's not a good match for my material. But really, a lot of times, you know, there are so many reprintings of a particular title. There might be, you know, three different Scholastic, you know, books of that same title with the same pages, and maybe it's just like a year different. And in that case, really, you know, when you do the title browse and you look and it's the same thing and Scholastic just printed it again in 2006 and, you know, in 2005, you can go ahead and you can attach to that. And if you want to, you can even go ahead and modify the title to add your ISBN for yours, too. It's not required, but, you know, if you felt like that you wanted to do that, you could. And I know some libraries have staff will even email me. They'll say, I have, this is what I have. It's this book. It's this publisher. This is the ISBN. What do you think? And I'm fine with that, too. If it looks like a good match to me, I'll add the ISBN to that record for them and then tell them, you know, go ahead and attach. So title and browse, you would do that if you know what the title is. Sometimes doing a title keyword search before you give up and go somewhere else is also good because sometimes it might be a series and you can't tell which is the series and which is part of the title. So sometimes title keyword can be helpful. And, of course, you've got your author browse and author keyword searches also. This is just showing you, this says item search and display, but this wizard, you know, the search part of it looks exactly the same as this call number item. And so you see this is where you would put in your search terms and pick your indexes. Library should always be all. And then you can change the type under the search button before you hit it. The other thing that Searcy Dynex software does sometimes that can be a real pain is once you look at a record, sometimes it'll change the index on you. So it might change to, I think after you catalog something, it changes to call number and exact. So if all of a sudden you just catalog something and then you do a search and you get some wacky kind of result, check the index and the type, and it may be that it's done that to you. This is just showing the different parts of the screen. We've got your search pane, your hit list pane where you get your results, and your viewer pane. And this is an example of a search that's not going to be very helpful as a cataloger. If I have the book with the title Winter and I do a title keyword search on that, you can see that it gave me 1,308 records that I would then have to look through. So in this case, a much better search, assuming I didn't get a hit on the ISBN, would be a search for the title Winter with a type of Browse. And then it puts me into a different sort of screen where it highlights the best match, and it's telling me there's 37 titles with the exact title Winter. And at that point, I can kind of search through them. Also, if I wanted to, any of these headers that are in gray, title, author, or pub year, you can click on them, and it will resort by title, by author, alphabetical, or by pub year, ascending or descending. So that can be quite helpful when you're looking for a record as well. Just look at the detailed display then when you go in that. In there, you would click on the bibliographic tab before you decide to attach, just so that you could look at the different information. Sometimes if you did a keyword search, you don't have to click on the bibliographic tab because you might have already been able to look at everything here, the number of pages, the publisher, the title, the author, you know, and then at that point, you know, you're ready just to go ahead and create your call number or item. You can see the different, you know, item categories. This is an old screenshot. There's no item category 4 in my screenshot, but this will show you the date created, the date due, who had it last, all kinds of good information there. You have your different search options. I know I did cover this in the a little bit in the presentations, the regional presentations, but just for those of you who weren't there, let me just quickly show you where those are. So in call number and item maintenance, you've got a little binoculars with a pickaxe. You can go ahead and you can pick different item types or locations to limit your search. It's also kind of nice if you're just looking, like let's say that you were cataloging some new CD books and you forgot to do something with them. Maybe you forgot to put the item category 4 in there and you want to double check them. You could just say item type CD book, pick your library, and just do a general keyword search that's just blank. And I believe the default that it retrieves these by, even though there's 3,246, it tends to sort by what you've cataloged most recently. So this would allow you to then kind of look through the last, you know, the most recent things that you had cataloged. You've also got another helper that's a power search. This one is pretty nice for if you have maybe a donation of something that doesn't have a good control number, ISBN, LCCN, and you're just trying to find a match. So, for example, I got the title Little Women, and the publisher is World Publishers. So if I just do a regular search for Little Women, I'm going to do all title browse, Little Women. There's 90 different titles on here that are Little Women, and that's kind of a lot to look through. Oh, you know what? It's still limiting. So there's the 90. There we go. And then I don't want to have to look through all those, so if I use my little binoculars with the plus sign, in the general keyword area, I could put world because that's the publisher, and that would be indexed in there, and then I can put in Little Women as the title. And now I only have 10 records to look through. A lot of them have the keyword Little Women in it, so that might be even less. So I can use my title column header. I can click on that. It resorts. And then I can look and see if one of these might match. You know, maybe mine is this 537-page Cleveland World Publisher one. Or maybe it's this one from 1968 that's a little bit, you know, must have bigger print or more illustrations or something. It has illustrations in it, but you get the idea. So that can be quite helpful to remember that there are these little helpers here as you're looking for things. Let's see. So we just went through all that. When you verify that you have a match, hopefully you're looking at more than just the title and author. Just checking a few other places as well to make sure that it's, for example, the correct format. That's pretty important. So now just a couple of tips about deciding whether or not you want to attach to something or bring something in. Just because you find a record on OCLC doesn't make it complete. And really there are some records on OCLC, and I'm going to show you one in a second here, that are so incomplete that they won't even be searchable by author if you just save them as they are. So just a warning there. For existing records on our catalog, as you're looking, please resist the temptation to change identifying information on an existing title. Just, you know, remember that when you have, you know, a DVD, a record for a DVD, there are other libraries that are attached to that, so just because you got, say, the Blu-ray edition of that, you can't go in and just change it so it says Blu-ray instead of DVD, because then you're creating a bunch of confusion on the system. So if you do have a Blu-ray instead of a DVD, and the only record on our system is a DVD, you would go to SmartPort, and you would try to find a different record. Same thing with a large print versus a regular print book. Just last week, and it is pretty common, it'll happen. I got an email from somebody and they said, you know, they had a patron who specially requested a book because of the large print, and it was sent through interlibrary loan, and when they got it, it turned out it was regular print, so they had to send it right back. And as we find those, I fix them, but it's nice if as you're cataloging, you're careful enough to make sure that you're matching on the important parts of the format. You know, if it's the same book and the publication's just a year different and the print is all the same, then, you know, no worries. But when you're talking about what could really impact whether or not somebody who wants to borrow it could use it, then you know, it's definitely time to create a new record. Here's an example of an OCLC record that's not even in SmartPort anymore, but it was at the time I made the screenshot. And this is just, the publisher is Fitzgerald Books. But you look at the author, instead of being in the 100 tag, which is the standard tag where you would find that, it's in this field, and you can see from the label it says it's an uncontrolled name. If this record is saved to our system, it's only going to be searchable by title because we don't recognize that as an author. So, you know, in cases like that, it's better to try to find a record on the system, you know, and even though that one was a Fitzgerald book, if it's a Fitzgerald book that's sort of just a different binding that's almost identical to this Grosset and Dunlap book, then, you know, you could save it, you could capture this, and then add that 020 tag with just a parenthesis, you know, in parentheses after it saying this is the Fitzgerald binding. So that would be preferable because, you know, then people can search for it by author. If there's multiple copies and you participate in interloan, if somebody wanted another copy of it and yours was out, they'd be able to interloan it from another library, and it's just a better situation all around. When you're cataloging, this is just kind of reviewing when to add a call number. Obviously, when you're cataloging something in call number item maintenance, if your library does not appear there, you're going to have to add one. Or if you're adding, sorry about the special effects, if you're adding different volumes in a set, it's good to just go ahead and add a different call number for each volume so that people can see which ones you have, which ones are out. And for that, like with this encyclopedia set, you would just add a different call number for each one. And the system, the software itself, is going to put that little type Z in between the call number and the volume. It recognizes the word VOL as volume, and that's how it kind of stores it in the database. But when people are searching, they don't see that. It's just a way of it to, you know, recognize what you're doing. Another reason you might want to add a call number is if your existing call number is different. So, for example, if your library has adult call numbers that start with fiction and young adult fiction that starts with YAFIC, and you wanted, you know, two copies of Twilight, one in the young adult room and one in the fiction room, you know, and so then you would create another one, and that would be fine. So that's when you add a call number. When you add an item, first of all, any time that you bring a new record in from SmartPort, you'll add an item. Even if it's a funny-looking auto-generated call number with the XX in front of it, because when you save something in SmartPort, it's going to create a little picture of that call number shelf with your library name. So please do that. I know it's really common for me to see these extra call numbers on the system, and sometimes it can cause some problems. Not huge problems, but sometimes it can make it hard for somebody else to use that call number. And unfortunately, there's so many things in our system I can do in a batch, but deleting those empty call numbers is really, really, really hard. So if you could just kind of make a note to try to remember that if you bring something in from SmartPort, you are going to add an item to it. Also, when you bring things in from SmartPort and it does have that XX call number, sometimes the classification scheme will say auto. You'll probably want to make a note also to change that to Dewey, or I don't think I have anybody who's not using Dewey on the phone, so that's what you would change it to. Also, if your library already has a call number and you're just adding more copies, we recommend that you just continue to add items underneath the existing call number. And here I've got Menominee County example, and they even have, you know, these books in different locations. One's on the bookmobile, one's at their Hermansville branch, but that's okay. As long as the call number is the same and the library is the same, they can just appear underneath that first call number, and you would just add items. We talked a lot about the different item information. Shadowing records, just I think you guys are familiar with the fact that, you know, if things are lost or missing, those are discards, they're hidden in the public catalog. You do have the option to manually shadow things if you ever need to while you're cataloging. Those items are still searchable in workflows when they're shadowed, but only by keyword or exact item ID. So that's another reason, like when you're trying to catalog something, if somebody else has the only copy and it's lost, it might be hidden, you know, in there. So it's another good reason to search a couple different ways. This is just showing you how you could manually shadow the call number or the item. If you click here, for example, then everything under this training users, both of those items would be unsearchable. But if I just highlight one and I say shadow item, then just that one would be hidden. You could also have the option, like if you click on the bibliographic tab, there's a button where you could shadow. And that would shadow everybody. So then, like, basically that whole title and everything underneath it would be invisible to everybody else, all the public on the online catalog. So in most cases, you don't do that. And we've not had a problem with that either. Often, you know, just you'll see that workflows will designate for some of the really the delivered shadowed locations. It'll put an S. A red S in front of it when you change it to that, just saying, okay, you know, I've shadowed this for you now. So I'm going to take a quick break here. And
the conference has been unmuted.
Any questions about that section?
I do. Sean, it's Millie. When can you expand or give an example of when it would be necessary to use the shadow? Or to,
you know, most of the time, I don't think that people are using it. I did have one library for a while that would use it when they were cataloging things. So they were cataloging things kind of pretty early, and they didn't want people asking for them yet.
Uh-huh.
And so they would shadow them. I'm trying to think of other times where you would shadow something. Basically, you know, it's the situation where you don't want people to see that for whatever reason. I have some libraries that have records, like really brief records that they've created for equipment,
uh-huh.
and it's more so they can track the equipment, but they don't want those records showing up in the system because really they're not,
they don't circulate.
You know, like, so like at the high school, like if you had a DVD player or a camera or something, and it's not going to be available to the students, it's just for the faculty,
okay.
maybe you would catalog it and you would shadow that record. But then, you know, when they came, you would just go to the back room, grab the camera, and check it out. But
okay.
you don't want it, like, searchable, you know,
not
to the public.
Circulation. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
What about from mending or something like, so if you, no, we just check it out to mend. Okay, never mind.
When you check things out to mending, those aren't shadowed.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe they're shadowed, but
yes.
the description will change to
okay.
being repaired.
Uh-huh.
And that, then at least people know.
Shadow is just invisible. Okay.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to try to leave things unmuted because we're getting closer to the end, and I would rather have people interrupt me with questions as we continue. So, just...
I have a question. This is Cindy.
Sure.
When you take a record from the smart port and you show it, the call number is X0, all those zeros.
Yep.
Do you change that to your
yes.
own call number?
Yes, you do. So what you'll do, and I think I have a, let me see if I can go back here. Here we go. So, like, let's pretend that this is an XX call number right here. So what you would do is, even though it looks totally crazy, you would hit add item. And then once you add the item, you would go up to the call number field, change it however you want, make sure the classification scheme is Dewey, and you're all set.
Oh,
you
yeah.
want to add the item first, even though it looks like a bad number. But once you add the item, it'll let you change it however you need to.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so SmartPort, we know that SmartPort is the tool that you can use to find a record elsewhere if it's not on our local system. And it's always a good idea to leave a catalog. So catalog here is our local catalog. We want to leave that checked when we go out to SmartPort, so that we can search the local catalog one last time, just to make sure somebody didn't add it while it was set aside waiting. In this example, they're searching catalog, Library of Congress, MLCAT, and OCLC all at the same time. I've found that if you select all four of those, it can slow down your speed significantly. So if I'm a library that's a public library that has the OCLC, I might just do catalog and OCLC. When I'm searching, it seems to go a little faster. Or if I'm at the school library, I might do catalog and MLCAT just to see if it's a little faster. Or Library of Congress. I think MLCAT's good, though, because MLCAT has a little more AV in it. And some of those libraries also get records from OCLC. So if I don't have OCLC, I might lean towards MLCAT. There's also an advanced search in SmartPort. So most of the time in SmartPort, you're going to want to do an ISBN search or a LCCN search. But if you have some kind of audiovisual material, sometimes there's not an ISBN. So in SmartPort, just to make sure that you guys know how to get there, you can always click, there's this third helper from the right. It says change search pane view, and you can click that, and it gives you kind of an expanded, like the binoculars with the plus sign in workflows, where you can link things together. And so if I was looking for a video, I might go ahead and type in, or a music CD, I might go ahead and I might type in the title and the author, and I'm just, or artist.
Oh.
And that can be really helpful. If it's a DVD, you can type in, like, the producer, if you think the producer's name would be there. If you start with artist or author and title and you don't get any hits on the catalog, then you can expand it out even more, and you can add in, like, the format in the general. So if you were looking for, Divergent. And you wanted it on Blu-ray, you could type that in here. And maybe one of the... it'll say general search not supported by catalog, but if you've already done a lot of things to make sure it's not in the catalog, then you can get a really good list. So this is giving me all of these videos from, you know, that with the title Divergent that have the performer Ashley Judd that have Blu-ray mentioned in the record somewhere. And I can look and see which one's a good match. Just, you know, if I had the Blu-ray and DVD combo and I was going to circulate them together, then I would just go ahead and select this. I know some of our libraries actually, if you do buy a combo pack of both of them, have been separating them into different things, you know, so that the Blu-ray and the DVD wouldn't circulate at the same time, because then if one person loses them, you've lost both your copies of the video. So then if you needed to, you could look, okay, this is, I'm just going to get the record. Even though I bought the combo pack, maybe I'm just going to download the Blu-ray only version because I'm circulating that as one thing. And that's fine. That's fine to do.
Catalog two separate.
A lot of our libraries are. There's both. So we've got some smaller libraries that are buying the combos, and they just, they've not had a problem with loss, and they just want to circulate them together. And so, you know, they might go ahead and download this one to get, you know, as one record. But then if you're like Peter White Public Library and some other libraries that I know of that have been putting them in separate cases, you know what I mean, so that they kind of hedge their bets, right? You know, you don't want to lose both of them at once to one rotten apple patron, you know. So then they circulate them separate. Plus then you can have two people enjoying the thing at the same time, right? You've got two copies. In different formats then too. So they would get two separate records then, one for the DVD and one for the Blu-ray.
Okay.
This is just showing you some different error messages that I know you guys can get in SmartPort that aren't terrific. Sometimes it throws people off. When you get that message, the call number already exists. Just type auto, all in uppercase, to generate a temporary XX call number.
Okay.
Also, if you, hopefully, you know, now that you've searched so well, you'll never get this message, but occasionally this does come up where you're saving a record and it will say, matching record found on title control, blah, 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 blah. And what we would like you to do is write this number down, and there is in workflows a, if I go to SmartPort, there is a title control number index right here. So I would just type that I number in there and hit search. Many times it will be exactly what for some reason you didn't find in spite of your best efforts, and you can just attach to it. If for some reason it is not a good match and you need a new record to come down, it's like a different record, then give us a call. There's a workaround that I can give you. And once you've used it a couple times, it's, you know, it's perfectly easy to do. But I like to walk people through it the first time. So if that comes up, just give me a holler. Capturing records in SmartPort, you know that it creates a copy of that record on our database. After capturing the record, now that we've, you know, really improved our database, there may be more times that you find that you should edit that record. We've always recommended that you would add, you know, the pages.
Oh, you can still put it in the hall. Oh,
right.
No, that's
I'm going to go ahead and, how about if I mute again? Sorry. So we'll just.
The conference has been muted.
Okay. So, so when you're capturing the record, you know, we've always told you that it's a good idea to add the page numbers if you can. But also, you know, if it's that you have the Scholastic copy from 2005, and this is the one from 2006, and it's the same everything pretty much. You could add the 020 with the ISBN for your item. If there are no RDA tags in the record that you find, we would love it if you would add them in, especially if it's an audiovisual material. If it's a book, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that you need to take the time if it's a book, if it's missing those tags, because we're not using them in our online catalog to really display more about the format. I mean, the assumption is that things in the library are print. But we would like you to add those tags to other records that you find. And let me show you an example. I've got one. So here, like, let's say I'm searching for this ISBN number in SmartPort. I'm going to go back. I can toggle back to my simple search this way. And it's going to give me an error message. No, it didn't. Okay. So I'm looking for this record, Saving Savannah. And with this ISBN, I have three records to choose from. So if this happens to you, and I think it definitely will, and you see these three different records, we would like you to look through them and see, first of all, if you can find an RDA record. So I click on the first result, and I hit Display. And I'm looking at this record, and it matches. Okay, I've got the Vintage Books 2009 edition of this, 510 pages. But I'm not seeing the new RDA tags, and those tags are the 336, 337, and 338. And in this particular, when you're just displaying, it's real easy to identify them because they'll actually show up as the number instead of the description. Once you go in to capture it, you'll see the description of what those tags are showing you, but it makes it easy in this view anyway. So now I've got these little arrows to go through my results, so I'm going to move forward one result to the next one. And this is that same record, same vintage books, but this one does have the new cataloging. It tells me it's text, unmediated, as in I don't need help, you know, like a special player to enjoy the book, and then it comes in a volume. So, great, this is an RDA record, and this is the one that I would capture. The last record I want to show you, though, is an example of what not to bring in, and sometimes we do see these. So, like, I scanned that, and I got an ISBN match, but look, this is in a different language. I believe it's in French, right? So, don't bring this one in. And we do, believe it or not, occasionally I'll have somebody email me, and they'll say, you know, I found this record, it matches my ISBN, but this one's in Dutch, or this one's in Spanish. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, we're logged in a certain way, and I think it does try to show us the English results first, but sometimes for some reason something goes goofy in SmartPort. And, you know, if the result for the foreign language one sneaks in there and it's the first thing you see, you know, just don't let that trick you. Okay, let me go back. There was one other thing I wanted to show you here with the second one. So when I capture this, when you hit capture, you're in a MARC editor. And if you needed to, like let's say I had the paperback edition of this and I needed to add the 020 to this at this point, I can go up here and I could click to add a field after the current one. Or if you like to right-click, if I right-click, I have the same choices that I would have on the top. And then I could just type in the name of the tag. And as soon as I do that, it tells me, okay, you're adding in another ISBN. The other things that we're hoping that you'll do to help us keep the database nice is that, and I'm sorry, this isn't giving me the full, there we go, is that you just kind of go ahead and look at the whole record. And down in the subject headings, if you can, if you see these, see this one says FAST, OCLC FAST, these are the FAST headings, and they also say they're unauthorized. They aren't recognized. We don't use them for anything on our database. We've got these 650s with this indicator of zero. These are the Library of Congress subject headings. So I can just go ahead and I could right-click, or I guess I'm kind of used to using these little helpers at the top. I can just delete those out. You know, and if you forget to do that part, it's not the end of the world, but if you can kind of, just if you have time, that would be nice. We do plan to, you know, do some searches for those types of subject headings that we don't like, and probably quarterly I'll, like, export them and batch delete and then reload the records as well, just to try to keep things clean. And then we save the record. When you hit the capture, it comes up with a screen, that SmartPort capture screen. It tells you to match and load and match on the title control number. That's always in there. So you just kind of leave this alone. This is where if you, for some reason, like let's say you needed to, it was matching on the ISBN and it wanted to replace it, but you needed that record to be saved, you can go into the title control number area and you could change that to say just O for OCLC number, and then it would go ahead and create a new record instead of replacing the record that's on the system. And I can tell you that now, but most times you won't remember when it comes up, so if it does come up and you need to be reminded, I would be happy to tell you again. this is just showing the capture screen. Okay. Now we have 3 minutes left, so I think I did pretty good for time. Let me show you a couple other things. Let me show you our cataloging tools page. So we do have a cataloging tools page that I think really needs to be reorganized a little bit better, but there are some good resources on here. One of them is, as you're bringing records in, if they're missing RDA tags, we've got this helpful document called Common RDA 3XX Combinations, and this document shows you what tags you would add if you had a Blu-ray record that was missing them. Most of the Blu-ray records are new enough that you probably aren't going to have to add this, but let's say that you had a DVD. In some cases, some of those records might not have that information. So if you could add that in, by using those little helpers after you capture the record, that would be wonderful. The things that are in yellow on here are not the new standard. They're not RDA. We had our cataloging, our little team of three. We looked at what was happening with, like, large print on our system. If you're bringing in a large print book, it's probably not going to have that subfield H large print. But unfortunately, it's probably not going to have the 340 large print either. So we're going to continue, if you can, to add that in for now, because we felt like there wasn't a good way to let people know that it was large print, and we just want to make sure that our patrons who have vision problems can find those records. Also, electronic resource, it's a little hard to identify those. The good news about this, though, is that we're not going to be adding ebooks for OverDrive anymore. We have this eResource Central product, so honestly, you're not going to have to worry about that too much. They're going to be very easy to find. So that's good. Just show you a couple other things, and then we'll have a minute or so for questions if you can stick around. Let me show you. Oh, and one other document on here, too. Let me back. On the cataloging tools page, there's that common RDA 3XX combination. Then there's also, we've updated our SmartPort document. And so it has a little more information about when you do the capture, how to look for those FAST and BISAC headings. And it just gives you a couple other tips on editing the records. I want to show you really one more time here. We'll show you how some of this RDA information is going to show up on the catalog. So, for example, once you add the RDA tags or you bring records in that have those RDA tags, if they're audiovisual material, we've got it set up so that it'll pull out the information and put it kind of where the GMD used to be. So before RDA, this would have said the calling, sound recording in brackets. Now it'll say the calling, it says video disc and it's DVD video. Or it'll say it's a video disc and it's Blu-ray video. So we're hoping that, with this change and with the addition of the facets, that we're improving things, that we're heading in the right direction, just to make things a lot more clear in our catalog. So that is my little speech for today. And I'm going to unmute.
The conference has been unmuted.
And just see, maybe I'll stop recording too, and then we'll see if there's any questions. So let me stop recording.